On Selection Sunday morning in Las Vegas, I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sport RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio, every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 and 1340 AM, Las Vegas flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The We also include social media director Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the Wiz. Nobody beats the Wiz.
And producing today's show, Jared Justice. We are also streaming live on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter, or I should say X these days, at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Studio Bank line is 702-876-1340.
Hey, Chris, I got something. Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. Vegas Golden Knights back after two games away from T-Mobile Arena. They got four this week, starting this afternoon with the New Jersey Devils, and we'll be joined shortly by Chris Chapman, who will be doing the pre, in-game, and post-game show today. I know he's loving that, being a New Jersey Devils fan himself, and also lots of basketball to talk about.
Going to overtime for San Diego State is nothing to be ashamed of. It's going to hurt, of course, but there's a lot of reasons these guys should have their chins up and their chests out.
So, as a senior, I just want to keep playing with my guys. Over time, you build a 10-month, a damn near year relationship with these guys, and it goes bigger than basketball. I just want to be able to keep being around the teammates, keep being around the coaches, because it's more than just basketball. But us being able to play more games is a blessing, so I'm not turning down it.
More games to just get more wins and just keep having fun playing basketball. So if we're asked to play in the postseason, we're going to prepare for it and walk into it with a winning mindset.
Proud of the guys in this locker room. You know, they had so much belief the whole year and came into this tournament playing confidently, playing loose, and winning in a variety of ways. Nobody's ever, I believe, won this tournament four games and four nights like this. And we never looked fatigued. San Diego State is a program that we got a lot of respect for. We knew we'd have to raise our level of toughness, and we did it. So, happy for our amazing fan base. Happy for the state of New Mexico, the city of Albuquerque. I know how much they love college basketball. We're going to enjoy this moment tonight.
And, of course, you heard from Kevin Kruger. You heard from Keelan Boone and Deedon Thomas Jr., and that was Richard Pitino. All that in the Big West Conference tournament that took place at the Thomas and Mack. One of five NCAA men's basketball tournaments that took place in Las Vegas. Five bids. I saw two of them yesterday. The Big West also taking place, the Dollard Loan Center. And a lot of great basketball. Maybe the best Mountain West Conference tournament I have seen since I've been covering the Mountain West. And that was back in 2012. This was incredible. Maybe the best tournament since back when BYU was in the Mountain West and Jimmer Fredette played in it. I mean, this was a great tournament. And UNLV, even though they only played one game, a great showing. We'll talk about that in a little while. Also, a lot of other conference tournaments. We'll get into that talk a little bit and some bizarre things happening in the NFL regarding quarterbacks. I mean, not super crazy, but to me a bit bizarre. I didn't see him coming, so we'll talk about that as well. And we'll get a little bit about what's going on with the Raiders from The Wiz when we do the Bone segment later on in the show, and that will be coming up in a bit. And that is What's on Tap. If you are looking to buy a home, refinance the home you currently own, or have any mortgage or real estate-related questions, contact RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. Go ahead, Spence, get right into Nightcap.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Well, when the Vegas Golden Knights left T-Mobile last week after Saturday night and beating the Detroit Red Wings, things were looking up. They went on the road, comeback win against the Seattle Kraken, and held a 1-0 lead going into the third period against Calgary. That's when things fell apart again. That's when people are left scratching their heads, and Bruce Cassidy left trying to find answers of what it's going to take to get this team energized and keep them energized through an entire game. We know they're missing Mark Stone. We know they acquired Tomas Hertl, and he is probably not going to see the ice till close to the postseason, if not the postseason. We don't know if Stone will even be back in the postseason. Rumor is he will be. A couple of good pickups in Anthony Mantha, Noah Hanifin over the right before the trading deadline, all those things positive. Goal has been hit or miss this year with Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson, joined by the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network, our normal producer, and today doing the pregame, in-game, and post-game show in place of Ryan the Hockey Guy. I know if there was one game Chris Chapman could do those responsibilities, it would be this game, knowing that you love the New Jersey Devils. A similar feeling that I felt last week with the Detroit Red Wings. Maybe the difference, the Red Wings have a shot, and at least up until right now are slated to make the postseason if it were to end today. New Jersey Devils, not so much. Mags, I know you're excited about this game coming up now, but who are you pulling for today?
Well, considering I'm getting paid to do the Golden Knights Network podcast, or not podcast, pregame, postgame, and intermission reports, I'll definitely be rooting for the team who's putting money in my pocket tonight. That's really what it's all about. So, you know, emotions aside, obviously grew up a New Jersey Devils fan, witnessed them winning 3 Stanley Cups. I was in New Jersey this year when they played an incredible 6-5 overtime game that New Jersey won. But, look, at the end of the day, I mean, look, I live in Vegas. I do the VGK Insider Show. Today I'm doing a little bit extracurricular stuff for the VGK, so I'm definitely pulling for Vegas in this one.
Yeah, I know. You know, it was really bittersweet, I said last week, because I really, the Red Wings, I need to see a Detroit team get in the postseason. I mean, it was great to see the Lions this year, but Detroit's been inept for like a decade, and so it's nice to see them challenging. So like I said, it was bittersweet, but with the Vegas Golden Knights struggling and also living in Vegas and them starting off every show I do on Sunday, I kind of was pulling for that as well. And it seemed like maybe the ship was right. In Seattle, they got behind, but they fought back. It looked like they had some grit, some resiliency, Chris. And they go to Calgary, and they've got that 1-0 lead that they get early. They hold it through 2 periods. And then in the third period, things kind of fell apart again. That's not necessarily the story of the Vegas Golden Knights. They've been finding different ways to lose hockey games and not accumulate points. Well, now they're sitting in the 8 hole, the final hole to get into the postseason. They're only 3 points in front of the Minnesota Wild. Granted, they're only a couple of points behind the LA Kings, who the Knights have a game in hand on. But Chris, this is starting to get pretty concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I think the concerning aspect to me, Brian, is that they just seem to lack urgency. And whether it's at the start of games, whether it's in the third period, I mean, look, everyone's going to talk about the win on Tuesday night against the Kraken. But what a lot of people are going to forget is they gave the Kraken every opportunity to win that game. Yep. 3 unanswered goals in the third period. You come out to start the third period with the power play, you don't get anything going, and then you give Seattle 3 straight goals, forcing you to come back and even get the 2 points in that game. I don't know if there's concern, because I think deep down these guys believe that they'll make the playoffs, and I think deep down they believe that they'll turn it on at the right time and they'll get the points they need to get into the playoffs. But you know what, Brian? I felt that way 2 years ago, and they crumbled down the stretch. You know, they lost to teams like New Jersey. They lost to teams like Chicago. So it feels different, yet it feels the same from 2 years ago. Will they have learned the lessons from 2 years ago? I don't know. You know, the difference is you have a full, healthy roster right now without the Sands, Mark Stone. Other than that, you've got pretty much everyone in your lineup who you have played this season who you would have penciled in. So I think, you know, while there's not concern, I think there's certainly some things you look at that are a little eye-opening, and the lack of urgency early on and late in games is a little, I think it's a little nerve-wracking for a lot of fans.
Yeah, it is. And you know, there's a lot of guys with so much experience, even though there's only a few original guys. A lot of guys in this team have playoff experience, postseason experience. And, I mean, they're not even a year removed from being the Stanley Cup champions. So I think that, you know, there is an opportunity. And like you said, Chris, there's this feeling, I think, amongst everyone, they're going to turn it on. They're going to turn on. But now you've got 16 games remaining. This switch has to click on quickly. And whoever's in place, I mean, guys have stepped up that have come up this year, guys, especially a guy like Pavel Dorofeev, who is, you know, having his best offensive production season and has been hurt a little bit. And a guy that they're going to count on down the stretch. A couple of guys that have come up from Henderson that have done the job. I mean, for a while there, they were playing with a fourth line of AHL players. Those are excuses. No one's going to make them because that's just part of the plug-and-play mentality of professional athletics. But, Chris, what about the last line of defense? You know, maybe I've been a little bit hard on Logan Thompson and Aiden Hill so far this year, but I expect a lot from these guys, Chris. I saw this unbelievable start a year ago from Logan Thompson. If he doesn't get hurt, God knows what kind of season he would have had. And then Aiden Hill comes in, kind of an afterthought, you know, when they pick him up from San Jose. The guy has been sitting on the bench. He was never really anybody counted on, already into his mid-20s. And he catches lightning in a bottle in the postseason when he returns from injury, never looks back. And, you know, no one, I think, would have complained had they given him the Conn Smythe trophy. So now you see Aiden Hill, and I see this inconsistency. I still see the ability to make the great save. But then I also see the dismay of letting in goals that should absolutely not go in. I talked about it last week. A couple of goals that I've seen from him since he's returned have been goals a high school goaltender makes. And you can't make a spectacular world-class save and then 5 minutes later give up a real soft goal. That just can't happen. Can these guys get consistent? And again, I understand you got to count on the players playing in front of them. But when players aren't playing great in front of them, the last line of defense, especially in hockey above all other sports, can make all the difference in the world. We have seen goaltenders a la Jonathan Quick take a team from the 8-hole, making the playoffs on the last day of the season, to the Stanley Cup championship. That's how big of an impact goaltenders can have. So yes, I am concerned with the play in front of them, but I'm more concerned with their play, because if they elevate their play like they did last year, and especially like Aiden Hill did last year, the sky is the limit for this team.
Well, I think the first thing I look at is Aiden Hill hasn't played bad the last 2 weeks or so. The problem is Aiden Hill hasn't played out of his mind either in the last 2 weeks. Like, I think what you need a game where Aiden Hill or Logan Thompson, when he gets the opportunity, when they come in and they steal you a win, right? Like, we talk about that all the time in the playoffs. Goalie stood on his head. You know, like, last year it was Bobrovsky in the playoffs, how good he was leading up to the series against the Golden Knights when finally the dam broke. But, you know, they need a goalie to put in a performance where you walk away from the arena saying, man, that guy was unbelievable tonight. And they haven't gotten that. They haven't gotten that all season from Logan Thompson and Aiden Hill and Yuri Patera. And, you know, it's frustrating because you think that at some point you look at Aiden's numbers before he got injured and you're like, this guy is in the conversation for Vezina trophy.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't played at the Vezina caliber that those numbers indicated early on. A lot of times it was a byproduct of, you know, Alex Petrangelo making an unbelievable play to maybe break a play up and stop the other team from having a 2-on-1 rush, or you got a hat trick from Jonathan Marchessault where the other team basically was out of the game. So I think, look, Aiden's played good. I mean, he hasn't been bad or terrible, but the problem is Aiden hasn't been lights out. And I think the Golden Knights Today would be a good game. Good game to do that because New Jersey's a high-powered offense. They're a team that, listen, like I said earlier, I was in New Jersey when they played early in this year, and I have never seen Bruce Cassidy more angry after a post-game press conference than I saw him after that New Jersey Devils game. So it's an opera, and that was a Logan Thompson start. Aiden Hill came back the following night in Long Island. But I think that's a game where if Aiden goes out tonight and he plays a fantastic game and shuts down a high-powered New Jersey Devil team, and they win, like, you know, you don't need to win 6-1. You go out there and win 4-2 or 3-1, 2-0, and you're happy. You're like, hey, you know what? Aiden Hill played a fantastic game. I think that's really what this team kind of needs. Maybe they need a performance from their goaltender where he steals the show. And I think the pressure's on now with 16 games to go for Aiden and maybe Logan when he gets that opportunity to come in and steal a game and be lights out in one of these games, because we haven't seen that this year from either one of them.
No, we haven't. And, you know, you see the confidence in Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee and Bruce Cassidy. No move was made to pick up another goaltender like last year. The insurance policy of getting Jonathan Quick, they're not doing that right now. And they didn't do that, and that's okay. Like you said, we've got to see these guys step up and steal a game here and there. And when the defense in front of them lets them down, which is going to happen at times in with any team, no matter how good they are defensively, the goaltender's got to be there. These guys have proven they can be. But again, now down the stretch, we need to see more of that. And again, if they are going to get ready and they are going to flip that switch, the goaltender's flipping the switch is, I think, where it starts. And then it trickles forward. And they've got to be more aggressive. They've got to hold on to a lead. And, you know, speaking of all that, and we'll end this conversation on the tremendous season Jonathan Marchessault is having. It's really pleasant to see. I know he's all about one of our favorite Golden Knights. Happy he has stuck around from day one and is still here. But next year we'll be playing the season at 34 years of age. Chris, I've talked about it before. I don't want to beat this subject into the glue factory just yet, simply because you know, there's still more season to go, and Jonathan Marchessault is going to be counted on tremendously for this team to make it any kind of run. We know he's going to be a free agent after this year. I have said point blank several times, I do not see him being a Vegas Golden Knight next year. It's just going to be too expensive for a guy his age and a hit against the cap to be able to continue with him. Although, I'll tell you what, you know, there was definitely some unrest when Marc-Andre Fleury went. I think the gaffe he had against Montreal in the Western Conference Final definitely ease that a little tiny bit, but still there was fan outcry. There's been fan outcry over different players, Riley Smith leaving last year. But Chris, I don't know that there will ever be bigger fan outcry, especially with the season Jonathan Marchessault is seeing. People won't see that 34 in front of his age. They're just going to see the number 81 departing Las Vegas. And if he does not re-sign with this team next year, I think we see the biggest outcry we've seen yet from the public, because this guy is maybe the favorite on this team.
Well, a couple things here. I'll start by saying I have said on multiple occasions that the very first jersey that's retired here at T-Mobile Arena will be that number 81 of Jonathan Marchessault. So I think he, at this point, he is the best, very best player who's ever played for the Golden Knights, and I don't think that's even debatable. So Conn Smythe winner, as you mentioned, he's going to break, barring something unforeseen, William Karlsson single-season goal record for the Golden Knights. But I should point out, you bring up his age, but Jonathan Marchessault, because he was an undrafted free agent, he bounced around a little bit before he eventually got his real opportunity in Florida. He came into the league late. So while he's 34, he doesn't quite have that NHL wear and tear that most 34-year-old players in the league have. I've also maintained that I think they're going to re-sign him. I think Jonathan Marchessault doesn't want to leave Vegas. I don't think the Golden Knights want him to leave Vegas, but the reality is they went out and they picked up Tomas Hertl, and it should be noted, San Jose retained 17% of his salary over the next six seasons. So that gives the Golden Knights some flexibility. They're going to have somewhere between $14 and $15 million in salary cap space. And, you know, there's a couple of other guys that maybe you want to re-sign. I think Michael Amadio is a guy who has earned a contract from this team to play and get a raise. I mean, he's been a really good player for this team since they picked him up off waivers. William Carrier is a free agent. You got a couple of RFAs. So those guys will be re-signed on the cheap. But I think for me, the question is term, not so much the money, because I think Marchessault knows what his worth is. But I think in terms of how many years, I think that could be a real holdup and a real sticking point. So we'll have to see. Look, I don't want to see the guy go. He's great in the locker room to talk to. He's always emotional. Whether they win or lose, he lets you know exactly how he feels. He's obviously a tremendous player on the ice. And when push comes to shove, Jonathan Marchessault is the guy. He's the smallest guy in the locker room, yet he does the most heavy lifting because he puts the team on his back and he carries the other team when it really gets tough. So I think that's something that you can't make up in terms of production. You know, it's the emotional aspect, it's the leadership aspect. And, you know, I think in the 7 years we've watched Jonathan Marchessault, we've also seen a maturation of a player. Early on, he was a guy who would take a lot of bad penalties. He was a guy who maybe stayed on the ice a little bit too long. He's grown as a player, as a leader. I want to see him back. I think he's, you know, we talk about Mark Stone being the heart and soul of the Golden Knights. I think Jonathan Marchessault is right there. And I mean, it's a tough decision. You know, we've seen this franchise make those tough decisions before, but if I have to make my prediction, it's that Jonathan Marchessault will retire a Vegas Golden Knight.
Chris, I would like to see that. Again, I'm going to stick with my prediction that he'll be gone next year. I like being wrong. I wasn't unhappy that I wasn't wrong when I said Ryan Reeves, and I argued with Mike McKenna that Ryan Reeves and Marc-Andre Fleury would be gone. And last year, I knew Riley Smith wasn't coming back either. I hope this one I'm wrong on. I'd love to see him retire a Vegas Golden Knight, and I'll tell you, he is my favorite non-Red Wing player probably of all time right now. Like you said, a favorite of the Vegas Golden Knights. When they first got here, I got a Marc-Andre Fleury, and then a couple months later, I got a William Carlson jersey. I think I will probably, before it's all said and done, have a number 81 jersey, especially, like you said, the smallest guy in the locker room. And he does, you know, at 34 is not super old, but, you know, again, in professional sports, whether you got wear or tear or not, it's just a natural progression of aging. Mother Nature is relentless and unforgiving. And 34 is 34, and it doesn't matter what you've got on your body. Only so many people continue on. Hopefully he's one of them. Jonathan's in great shape. He takes such pride in what he does that I think he's got a few good years left in him, and hopefully the Vegas Golden Knights see that and can figure out a way to pay the people they need to pay and to keep Jonathan Marchessault. He's Chris Magnum Chapman. You can catch him today a little bit later on this morning right here on Fox Sports Radio, as Chris will be doing the pregame show, the intermission reports, and of course the postgame show. Give him a call, and let's hope his New Jersey Devils go down today and the Vegas Golden Knights start this homestand, because I've said this homestand to me is crucial. There's four games. I think they need minimally 6 points out of these four games, because after these four games are done with, there's 12 left on the season. Just not enough to start getting that momentum. It's got to start right now, and I think Chris is right. It starts today. Mags, appreciate you. We'll be listening today.
Yeah, no problem. I got to go start, at least watch the first half of Liverpool and Man United.
So, I know you. I know you do. I know it's in the background as it is. All right, that's nightcap. And go ahead, Spencer. We're going to get started. We're going to talk about the Mountain West Conference Tournament getting started with that. We're going to listen to what Kevin Kruger had to say about this season and what, you know, his feelings on UNLV and how they progressed throughout the season.
Yeah, you know, the ups and downs. But at the same time, you know, finishing with momentum, a lot of positivity, a lot of great support, and these guys dealt with a lot, especially early on, still trying to figure each other out a little bit, as I told them in the locker room, a lot to be proud of, they're going to look back and remember a lot of great things, a lot of great games, a lot of great days together. Unfortunately, just a little too inconsistent there, especially at the beginning, the front half of the season, because I still feel this is a really good team that if we had another month, we'd, you know, continue going, continue playing, and keep getting better.
You know, I'm not going to disagree with anything Kevin Kruger said right there. I think this team was a pleasant surprise. They surprised me. I think they surprised UNLV alumni. I think they surprised students and fans alike, and even journalists around the state that have been covering UNLV. The running Rebels, especially after starting with that putrid loss against Southern, where I was saying watching that game that they might not win a game all season other than a couple of really, really, you know, nobodies that they were playing. But what I didn't know is I didn't know the ability of the twins, Caleb and Keyline Boone, who are absolutely two of the, you know, two of the staples of this franchise, and also the fact, or franchise, but this university, and also the fact that Dedan Thomas Jr. was a true freshman. At the beginning of the season, a guy that, well, not even the beginning of the season, this guy should have been a senior in high school this year. And he has played so incredibly well every game, as Kevin talked about during the press conference after the UNLV lost to San Diego State in the Mountain West Conference quarterfinals. He talked about the growth of him. And, you know, you can't say enough about Dedan Thomas Jr. and how he has become a leader of this team as an 18-year-old true freshman, freshman of the year in the Mountain West. You know, I mean, if UNLV would have advanced even to the semifinals, he had a shot at being an all-tournament team player because he was such an integral part of UNLV hanging in that game. It's just he missed a couple of big shots down the stretch. But I'll tell you what, he got him into overtime with a monster shot against San Diego State. And you thought, wow, this is going to be it. And they went up by as many as 4 points in overtime. The one thing that was you know, that hurt him a lot, and Shane Newell had missed a great deal of the season being injured. He got back for this game. He got back into the postseason right in the nick of time for this game, and he played a lot of minutes. But in overtime, with Vegas Golden Knights up by four, they got a steal on a rebound, and the ball went to Shane. He looked over at the sideline. I didn't know whether he was talking to the referee saying he should have gotten a foul, if he was looking to Kevin Kruger. But after the game, I got a chance to ask Kevin Kruger what happened there, because none of us really knew.
First, in overtime, when Shane Newell got his pocket picked, what exactly happened there? He looked like he was looking over to the bench or to the official, and then they took the ball away from him.
Yeah, that all happened really fast. I'm going to have to go back and watch it. I couldn't say anything. I'd be guessing right now, and I don't want to be in the wrong or speaking on an assumption of my memory that would end up being wrong. But it was a very weird play. Took my eyes off for a second, so I'd be piecing things together. It's a great situation, a great example where we just got to be strong, finish out possessions, but Shane made a lot of great plays tonight. He gave some great minutes. He brought a level of physicality that was needed. At the same time, we got to finish out those plays.
Yeah, I mean, he played really well, you know, in the game for the most part. But, you know, when it was all said and done, he didn't have any points. He played over 27 minutes of the game. You know, not a lot of contribution other than he was on the floor. And he's played solid defensively. But that was a complete lapse in focus. And you just can't have that. You got the ball in your hand. You've got to always be focused. I mean, it is controlled chaos when you're in overtime in a tournament game in college basketball. You just can't not pay attention. I don't want to hammer the guy too much. Again, he missed the majority of the season. I think he played the first seven games and then was gone for the rest of the season, hurt. But that really, I mean, if UNLV takes the ball up the floor and just even takes another 30 seconds off the clock there, it changes everything. But right away, when San Diego State got that steal, they went right down and scored, and it went from being a four-point game, potentially a six-point game or a seven-point game, to a two-point game, and that made a lot of difference. And UNLV just didn't seem to recover from that gaffe. And you know what happens? I mean, and I didn't want to hammer him too much, but again, a really good season for UNLV. And when I say a good season, they had 19 wins. And you're like, well, how great of a season is that? Well, let me tell you something. Again, after that beginning, the way they started against Southern, after that putrid Air Force loss, you know, this team was left for dead. And after that Air Force loss, they became a different team. They really did. They should have beaten Reno. They beat San Diego State. They beat New Mexico a second time. They beat four ranked teams this year. The big question now is, will this team get an NIT bid? Now, I think they do if even five teams from the Mountain West Conference get into the NCAA tournament. I'll tell you right now, there's no question about it. San Diego State, Utah State, Reno, and obviously New Mexico are locks. Colorado State in the postgame press conference seemed to be talking like they were a lock. I don't know how, when they're one game less than New Mexico. New Mexico was still not a lock going into the championship game against San Diego State. There were people that felt that if New Mexico loses that game, they could be one of the teams left out. Well, that's not the case anymore. So do they leave out Boise State, who a lot of people are going to feel is in? Boise State ended the season as the 3 seed in the Mountain West Conference. And then you've got, you've got Colorado State. Now, they were the 7 seed, but much of the season, they kept going in and out of the rankings in the top 25. This is a team with a lot of talent, good inside skills, and, but are they going to get left out? Now, the question is, I don't think both teams will get left out. One of the two will get in, whether it's Boise or Colorado State, and I think Colorado State's in for sure. I thought Boise was in for sure, but then they lose in the quarterfinals, and you scratch your head and say, are they for sure in? Now, if both those teams didn't get in, which one of them will, but if they both didn't, UNLV definitely will not get an NIT bid because both those teams would get NIT nods, and UNLV with 19 wins isn't going to get one. Now, if both of those teams get in, it's a lock. UNLV will be in the NIT. There's no question the NIT would like a Mountain West Conference team, especially when you get 4-plus teams in the NCAA tournament. You want one of those teams in the NIT. And I think the NIT and the NCAA committee, who now picks the 32 teams that go to the NIT, I believe that that committee would look at Las Vegas and say, look, man, they just had the Stanley Cup final there last, in the spring and in the, or I should say early summer. Then they hosted a Super Bowl. Okay, that's what's gone on. Last year, they had the West Regional Finals in Las Vegas. The NIT would probably love to have a game hosted at the Thomas and Mack Center right now. So if Las Vegas does get in, I feel they will get at the very lowest an 8 seed, which would give them in their bracket, which would give them one home game at least. In the NIT, and I think that will happen if UNLV gets in. Again, now, if only 5 teams get in the NCAA tournament, will the NIT take 2 Mountain West Conference teams? They'll definitely take either Boise State or Colorado State if they're left out. And like I said, if they're both left out, they'll take them both, and UNLV's out. But if they take one of those teams gets left out of the big dance, will UNLV still get an NIT bid? That's where I'm scratching my head. Kevin Kruger definitely talked about, when I asked him after the game, what would he say to the committee? This is what he had to say.
A little tougher right now to get into the NIT than it has been in the past with the committee now making those decisions, 32 strict teams. What would you say to the committee right now why UNLV should be one of the teams to get into the NIT?
Oh, I think... We finished fourth in this conference. I think we're trying to send 6 or however many as a conference. We're pushing for that, and we finished right in the middle of it. Had some great wins. We've clearly gotten better since January 1, or even before the Christmas break. And I think there's a lot of reason to invite us. It's the team deserving of the postseason, deserving of the NIT for sure.
And, again, I there's no argument there. I think they are a team deserving. I think that 20th win, like had they beat Southern or Air Force or even they had Reno on the ropes, they should have beaten Utah State. They had Colorado State on the ropes. Any one of those games, 20 wins, they're locked in the NIT. I think they'd for sure, even if only 5 teams got in the NCAA tournament and it was Boise or Colorado State left out, I think UNLV with 20 wins would be locked into the NIT. I think it's that 19-win barrier and still the old connotation of the Mountain West Conference. Yes, San Diego State did volumes for this conference, getting to the national championship game last year, and then having the success the Mountain West has enjoyed this year also bodes well. But again, it's really tough that 7 tournament teams out of the Mountain West Conference, if UNLV does get an invitation to the NIT, man, I don't know if that's ever happened before. I didn't really do my due diligence today, Spencer. Maybe you can look, but I don't believe there's ever been 7 Mountain West Conference teams playing in the postseason before. This probably would be a first. And that really says a lot for the Mountain West Conference. And when you talk about them, about being a mid-major, as a matter of of fact, Richard Pitino got kind of upset when someone asked him about being a mid-major, and he said, you know, I don't think the players or the coaches view this as a mid-major. Now, we know it's not a Power 5 conference, so it's maybe a little bit above the mid-major and a little bit below Power 5 conference, but UNLV has money to pay players now. We know Dedan Thomas Jr. got paid, so that's something where they are saying, okay, our conference is stepping up, and we'll see more and more of this, I believe, over time. But overall, Mountain West Conference tournament, to me, a big success. I said time and time again, in my opinion, and I said it at the top of the show, the best Mountain West Conference tournament I have seen played in Las Vegas since I've been covering the tournament since 2012. And again, I've lived here since 2004. I went before that to some of the games. And again, since Jimmer Fredette and BYU played here in the Mountain West Conference and in that tournament, I haven't seen a tournament this exciting. It was really, really cool. And, you know, New Mexico, man, they caught fire at the right time. This is a very talented team with some very high skilled players. I mean, you look at the tournament MVP in Jalen House. This guy, I mean, he is greased lightning. He is just so incredibly quick. I know I talked to one of my good friends, David, who was at the game, was telling me that this guy can be a wild card. He's a little bit of a mental case at times, and every now and again he can go wild and start missing shots. Well, that wasn't the case in this year's Mountain West Conference tournament. He wasn't missing shots. He was controlled fury, talking to the crowd. I loved everything I saw about this kid, and he really was the catalyst and the spark plug that took New Mexico to the Mountain West Conference tournament championship and sealed the automatic bid, shut everyone else up. It was really, really cool to see. I got some great video footage that I'll be posting on Facebook and on some other social media later on today, but this team played really well, and Spencer just put up. So you see Jalen House on the far right there. If you look at the other ones, that is, you know, that's a guy that was hurt. That's Dent and Donovan Dent. Not that he was hurt, he had a terrible flu, and so he's one of the starting guards. I mean, he's with Jalen House. He's the starting off guard, and he was hurt. He was out. He played like 10 minutes the game. He just couldn't get off the bench. But other guys stepped up and played well for New Mexico, and this is a team that could win a game or two if they play at the top of their game. This potentially could be a Sweet 16 in the tournament. Beyond that would be a prayer, but they are really good. They're fun to watch, as is San Diego State. I'll tell you right now, I don't know how good of a pro Jaden Ledee will be, but this guy is a beast. I'm amazed that he hasn't been recruited to play tight end for the Aztecs football team. This guy is a flipping monster. And, you know, when he just imposes his will, and there's nobody that could stop him. The big fella, a great Obakor, however you pronounce his name for Utah State, neutralized him a bit. But Jaden Ledee is just an unstoppable force, especially in the Mountain West Conference. Again, he will be an NBA player. Don't know how good. Now, another guy that has a lot of talent, a senior, and a lot to live up to, it's like Richard Pitino's, Rick Pitino's son. Well, Jamal Mashburn Jr. has a father that played in the NBA for a while, a good NBA player, a guy who made an all-star game or two, and he's got something to live up to, too. I got a chance to talk with Jamal Mashburn, who also made first-team all-tournament in the Mountain West Conference tournament after the game. A good interview, a good kid. I was pretty impressed, and here's how that went.
Talking to Jamal Mashburn Jr. after you just won the Mountain West Conference Championship, initial thoughts?
Man, I'm just blessed. I'm just so blessed, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to, you know, come in 3 years, and it was a quick turnaround, quick, you know, trying to rebuild a program, and man, we got the right guys to do it, and I'm just happy and blessed. But it's not over yet. We still got, you know, 6 more games to win.
This team was ranked all year on and off, and at the end, they still be questioning, even after yesterday, will you guys make the tournament? Personally, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought you guys were in, and I think 6 teams deserve to be in it. What was your guys' thoughts of motivation? Like, okay, you know, let's leave no doubt.
Yeah, we felt disrespected, for sure. I mean, we handled our business throughout, you know, the entire year. Obviously, we had that one bad loss against Air Force that we're, you know, we're not proud of, but man, we put in the equity, we put in the time, and we've trusted our work and continue to just, you know, propel throughout each game and each year. And you know, it's we took that as motivation, for sure. I mean, we think we're the best team in this conference. I mean, that's plain simple.
4 games in 4 days, man, at this intensity and this level. What has that done to you? And I got to tell you, man, I saw you 2 take. I'm sitting right there. I saw 2 wicked falls. The first one, you got up, and I'm like, man, he's in pain. I don't care what he's doing.
the second one, it's like you fell in the same place again. And even though it didn't look as bad as the first fall, it was probably cumulative from the first fall.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, 4 games in 4 days is tough. But when you got a group like this, I mean, who practice hard, who goes about things the right way, who goes about things with humility and just being humble about everything, I mean, it's easy to wake up and just play hard and just to, you know, help the next guy. And, you know, just to pick each other up and, you know, be in the gaps and do the little things that help us win a championship, which is what we did today. So.
Three guys make the all-tournament team, of course, Jalen House being MVP. Topping just seems to be all over the board. You hit the big shots, and then Jalen House. What got into this guy? I mean, he's always had a motor like this, but it seems like this tournament, almost like he took it personally. He's talking to the fans, for God's sakes.
Man, I tell you this every time, man. When we first got here, he's been the same. Ever since that, he's never changed. It's what I respect about him. Throughout all the noise and the nonsense that comes through, that comes at him, he still is himself, and I can just respect that about him. And you know, him talking to the crowd and doing all the stuff he did throughout this tournament, he's done when we were 300 in the net and when there was no fans. He's talking to no fans. Like that's just who he is. So I can respect that, man. That's a great kid, and he's gonna be a great pro, you know, years to come.
Two more questions. You talked about Richard Pitino and what he's meant to you, bringing you here, and one of the first guys you recruited. How good of a coach is this guy? What do you expect to see, not just of him this year, but in the future?
Man, he's a great coach, man. I mean, he knows how to put dudes in spots. You know, he's a player's coach, so he really understands, you know, players and, you know, their personalities. Because being a coach is more than just X's and O's. It's about understanding people, understanding teammates, understanding how to control a locker room. And he's great at that, man. He's gotten better each and every year from Minnesota, from my time with him to now. He's gotten so much better.
And you can relate. Both of you have fathers, a lot to live up to. And so, you know, you've proven it on the court in both cases. Finally, the NCAA tournament is here.
Yep.
What's the sky for this team? What's the limit? And what is it going to take you to make that run in the NCAA tournament?
Man, the limit is what we put on ourselves. I mean, I think, you know, we have so much talent. We have so many guys that are humble about the process. So we can go out there and really make some noise, man. And I'm just so blessed to – this is my first time playing in the NCAA tournament, and, it's been a goal of mine since I was a little kid, man. So I just can't wait to get out there and play with these guys and just play hard and just continue to stack wins, man, because we've got six more to go.
So, appreciate your time.
Appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you.
Jamal Mashburn Jr., and I love the kid. He's kind of small. I don't know what his future will be, but I think he can definitely play in Europe. Good motor, good kid, and super humble, man. And I wish New Mexico all the luck in the world. I hope they can go and represent the Mountain West Conference as I do other teams as well. And, you know, we'll see what happens with UNLV. It is Selection Sunday, 6 o'clock Eastern time for the men. And that's actually 3 o'clock our time for the men and 2 o'clock our time. The women's selection committee will find out where UNLV falls. A lot of pressure on them. Lindy LaRock, just a tremendous coach. And people are saying, you know, UNLV needs to win in the tournament. I think they'll get a favorable draw on the women's side. I think maybe we're looking at potentially a 7 seed. I don't know if they can get as high as a 6 seed, but they probably will be favored for the first time in their opening game, and they need to get over the hump, and I think everyone's expecting that. Regardless, she has just done an unbelievable job, and be happy with Lindy LaRock and appreciate her while she's here right now, because let me tell you, when Stanford's job opens up, which is probably going to be fairly soon in the next year or two, she is going to be a prime candidate, having played there. I don't think she stays at UNLV when that time comes. So definitely enjoy and appreciate her while she's here. And again, let's hope UNLV moves on. The other tournament that I got a chance to check out over the course of the weekend was I went and saw the Big West tournament, and a lot of fun. You know, the Hercules Tires Big West tournament came down at the end to a Long Beach State and UC Davis. And Long Beach State, man, the 8 seed. And what's funny is their coach had already been fired. And he was fired before the tournament. He coaches them in the tournament, and they weren't even, you know, they were not going to play in the NIT if they don't win this thing. And here he takes them from the 8 hole in their tournament, which is like the longest shot you can have. And here Long Beach State is going to the NCAA tournament. It was a fun game. It was an exciting game. I went and saw that with Chris Wynn and some other friends yesterday, and I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a good job. And I'll tell you what, the Dolly Loan Center, I know that most people familiarize with themselves with the Dollar Loan Center, mostly for the Henderson Silver Knights. Some other teams play there as well. But I'll tell you what, it's a really good facility for basketball. I thought, you know, unfortunately, it wasn't a lot of people there, but the venue itself was really nice. I love the Dollar Loan Center. I love the setup, and it's a great place to view any sport. But really, really impressed in the 2 years I've went to the Big West tournament there and how well they have hosted it and done it. I want something other than a tuna fish sandwich, but beggars can't be choosers, right? So let's leave that one alone. And other than that, we've got some other conference tournaments, and we'll talk about them in a second. But before we do that, let's jump into Fact This.
Fact This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact This.
Fact This, brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you're experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation today. It is a fact. Kent State men's basketball coach Rob Senderoff is a liar. This is proof after the Mid-American Conference championship game.
I do not blame Julius. There's 100 plays in the game, and that was just one of them. Right now, it's probably the worst thing that's ever happened to him right now. But if it's the worst thing that's ever happened to you when you're 50 years old like I am, you've lived a pretty charmed life. So, tomorrow the sun will come up. It'll be a little cloudy for me and for our guys, but the sun will come up tomorrow.
That is head coach of the Kent State basketball, Rod Senderoff. And Rob, I'm sorry you lied. You are blaming Julius. You probably went home and made a dartboard of the guy and are throwing him at his head. No offense, but wow. Kent State, a team, they ended up 17-17. They were 17-16 going into this game. They win the game. They go to the NCAA tournament. They don't win the game. They're done. I mean, it's over with. They had a real nice run from the 8-hole in the Mid-American Conference to get to the championship game. Akron, a team that if they didn't make it to the NCAA tournament, they were definitely going to at least play in the NIT. A pretty good team in the Mid-American Conference. And like, this game is down. I mean, just to let you know what happened, was 6 seconds to go in the game. Kent State goes up by 1 point. And then Julius Rollins, a sophomore at Kent State, a guy that comes off the bench, he said after the game that he lost track of the score. He commits an intentional foul. He intentionally fouled the player from Kent State. He hits both free throws. Kent State gets the ball back with about 4.6 seconds to go in the game. And they don't win. They miss the shot, and they go home, and the season ends. So, I mean, it was tough to watch. It reminded me on a much lower scale of like when Chris Webber called the timeout against North Carolina in the championship game, just a complete brain fart. And that's what happened to this poor kid, Julius Rollins. And he is Kent State, and then went home. So, like I said, Senderoff, I appreciate you protecting your player, but you lied. There's no question you were pissed as hell. I'm sure. Sure, you didn't yell at him. There's nothing you can do after the fact, but you know damn well that you were really, really angry with him, and you got home probably the entire way home swearing up a storm. The schools are about all together. I think they're like 12 miles apart, Kent State and Akron, but Akron goes to the big dance and Kent State goes home. A couple of other conference tournaments going on of note. How about NC State, man? This is the most exciting they've been since the cardiac pack of Jimmy Valvano back in 1983. Pretty damn cool. They beat North Carolina, the number one seed. North Carolina is still going to get a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. I'm guessing they'll be the number one seed in the West because of the loss. But the 84-76, North Carolina State goes from going home with 17 wins to winning, or excuse me, with 18 wins, wins four straight games, ends the season 22-14, and is on their way to the big dance. And what about the ex-UNLV coach, TJ Otzelberger? With an ex-UNLV player, Keyshawn Gilbert. They blew out the number two seed in the country, the Houston Cougars, 69 to 41. It is a season-low 41 points for the Cougars, who average 74 points a game. That 28-point loss is the third-worst loss by an AP poll number top-ranked team since the AP poll started in the 1948-49 season. I mean, it was pretty bad. I guess we got to take our hats off to Otzelberger, who's recruiting well. Iowa State is a team that could make a run in the tournament. I don't see them getting as far as the Final Four, but I would be surprised, depending on the pairings, if they went, if they were any worse than the Sweet 16. And I think this is an Elite Eight caliber basketball team right now. So congratulations to Otzelberger. You didn't do crap when you were here, but you know what? You're showing that you're not too bad of a coach. So I'll give you some credit for that. A couple of others to go on today. A couple other tournament bids that will be left open today. You've got the Big Ten championship game. Should be interesting, but I don't know. I mean, I was surprised that Purdue lost in that yesterday. Could see Illinois winning it. We'll see. And then you've got the American Athletic Conference and the Ivy League, and I think the AAC is also going on today. So we'll see. You've got a couple of big games. I'm looking forward to watching a little bit of college basketball today, and of course, 3 o'clock, the Men's Selection Committee. So finally, let's wrap it up. We've got about 4 minutes left to go on the show with some NFL talk. And I'll bring you in, Wiz. We haven't had a chance to talk all day. Wiz is broadcasting from home, but there he is. Look, wearing his Raiders hat. I'm excited. The Raiders have made a couple of moves, strengthened themselves on the defensive side of the ball, which we know will definitely help them out. I'm not sure, Sue, about Minshew mania in Las Vegas, but it looks like Gardner Minshew will probably start the season as the starting quarterback. I don't think it's going to be Aiden O'Connell. So Minshew mania in Las Vegas. He's got a lot of weapons to work with, one less since Josh Jacobs has departed, but we'll see what happens there. But the big news yesterday in the NFL, Spencer, Russell Wilson, we already know, had signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers, which made Kenny Pickett, when he found out he wasn't going to even compete for the starting job, or not that he wasn't going to compete, that Russell Wilson was going to be taking first-team snaps, he said, trade me. And they did. Now you get to go play behind Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia. Good luck with that one. I mean, Jalen does get banged up, but he plays hurt as much as any quarterback in the league. But the surprise to me, Spencer, I had a feeling Justin Fields was going to separate from the Bears. You know they want Caleb Williams, no matter what we've heard, but Justin Fields now to the Pittsburgh Steelers to compete with Russell Wilson for the starting job. Are you surprised about that at all?
No, I'm not surprised. And the list of teams that were going to go after Justin Fields were just shrinking by the day. The Raiders signed Gardner Minshew, the Kenny Pickett trade happened, and suddenly it was only a short list. And obviously, all these GMs around the league just didn't have a lot of interest in the guy. And I know he has a lot of potential, but his on-the-field, you know, stuff just hasn't been good enough. I mean, no one wants to take a risk. It's not like he's on a rookie deal. Like, if you take him, you're going to have to play him, and then, you know, you have that hard decision of paying him. So, and the fact that they had the first overall pick, the Bears just had zero leverage because everyone's like, okay, go ahead, go to draft day with Justin Fields and see what that does to your locker room when you draft Caleb Williams first overall. So they had to get rid of him. I think the Steelers made a good decision. I mean, it's a really buy low situation. They can get rid of him, although I do think it's going to be awkward because, like, what if Wilson does play well? He's only on a one-year deal, and I'm pretty sure Justin Fields is on an expiring contract as well. But, yeah, I don't know. I just think the Steelers are plugging in a lot of stuff, trying a lot of different things, and we'll see if it works out for them. But I think they said that Wilson is going to be the starter. So I don't really know what that does to Justin Fields' confidence. I mean, we've seen that so many times in NFL history where, like, Josh Rosen, where you just, if you break a quarterback's will and confidence, like, it's just not going to be good for their long-term career.
I think Justin Fields is more mentally stable than Josh Rosen as far as it goes. He has been a starter, and Justin Fields has had some success. I think he'll compete with Russell Wilson. I'll tell you what, they gave Caleb Williams DeAndre Swift and freaking now picked up Keenan Allen. They're giving him some weapons to deal with. It'll be exciting out there for him. Listen, I want to thank everyone. We are out of time. The show's called Out of Line. We're here on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll be back next week. I want to thank, of course, Jamal Mashburn Jr. for taking some time out, Spencer, and, of course, Jared Justice for Man in the Wheels of Steels. We are out of time. This is Out of Line. And, again, who will we have at next week? Well, I know a couple people. Jim Gem will be joining to talk Aviators baseball, and another surprise for you. We'll let you know when that time comes. We'll see you at that time. Bye-bye.